So what was the outline of things that I probably missed?
We talked about how I'm going to like burn down a police station if my internet goes, and
that's cool.
Then we talked about LaRue and how they invented calling calling your favorite sex person baby.
They did invent that. Yes.
Yeah, you're all caught up now.
No one ever did that before LaRue.
Definitely not. It's such an unorthodox thing, calling the person you want to have sex with a child. It's
like, oh no, I could never like, oh my god, no.
I could never like, no, I could never use the term baby. It always freaked me out.
Well, I have to endure it now. So
I have friends who always say baby in their relationships. Like, you don't know they're a baby guy until then you meet them with their partner. They're like, baby this, baby that.
Yeah, I would never do that. And now I have a boyfriend that only constantly calls me baby.
Julia, have you ever been with someone who would call you, or have you ever called someone a bear or bastion?
Oh my god! Sorry, that peaked. No.
I love how Julia just had like a reaction like those two kids just now. Oh my god!
No, that's disgusting. No.
But people in Germany do it. It sounds cute.
That's why I don't fucking date Germans. That's why I don't date Germans. Because they have horrible Kosenamen, like horrible nicknames for their lovers.
Well, Shash Julia Julia just dates burly Italian man who call him my sweet gabagool.
No.
Hey, you're my gabagool bear.
Oh my god, Bärchen or Schatz. Oh, that's all disgusting. Why would you do that?
I really thought Rob was about to say, you know, when you have like you have friends who call you baby, and you're like, Rob, what?
No, I don't have friends.
I call my friends baby.
That would be way cooler, actually, though, than like calling your partner that. Like calling your friends baby is like kind of endearing if you think
that's
about
true.
It.
Yeah, I think sometimes I've
heard. All right,
that
so we all
calling. Calling someone you have sex with baby is perverted and disgusting. Yeah.
So are we all swearing here that we're going to call each other baby?
Well, yes, baby.
I mean, okay, I could, baby. Yeah, you know, listen. No, now it sounds like a 50s thing. Like, listen here, baby.
That's why we're doing it. I got that from, I think I first learned about that from the Easy German video. You watch those, Kieran? I think you would like them on YouTube.
What, did they call it baby? Wait.
No, Easy German Easy 208. German. I just looked it up. What Germans call their loved ones?
Nothing.
I
we don't love.
Kosenam. Yeah, dann fangen wir doch mal nach. Los
geht's. Actually, you can get behind the baby thing if it is.
Oh,
authentic.
Mein kleiner Geschlechtsverkehrpartner.
Ew, what the fuck, Nick?
I was trying to make it really just like literal, like a big long German word.
Geschlechtsverkehrpartner.
Oh, dear God. Moppy. All right. Hey, and welcome to an incredibly casual episode of Corner Spatey. We've got the full gang here. I'm Kieran. I'm joined by Julia.
Oh, that's me. Hi.
Nick.
Hi, I was hoping not to be last, and I'm not. Ha ha, Rob.
And also, Rob's here. I guess Nick spoiled that. Jeez.
Hello, Schnickies.
Schnickies.
Oh, okay, look, I'm learning German. Okay, I'm learning all the worst German.
Schnecke, Schatzi, Bärchen.
But Schneckel is like,
stop it. These are all horrible.
I know.
But is Schneckel snail?
Yeah, snail. Schneckel. Schneckel.
There's only one Irish one I know, and I kind of like it, which is Quijla, which is like pulse.
Okay, that's
pulse.
Cool.
Yeah, like heartbeat.
That's like that's not the worst.
It's not the worst.
All the German ones are really
Germans
bad.
Germans are really bad. Yeah. With that. So I'm yeah. I'm taking baby. Like I'm fine with that actually.
Now that I've put them up, stacked them up against all the German ones. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, also, yeah. Like, I can't do anything against it, so.
Anyway, as we are getting used to recording this stuff remotely, we are about 5 minutes away from recording this over an actual phone call. That would have been wild, but doable.
Listen here, Kieran. Long time listener, first time caller.
I was almost...
Your actual...
I was almost forced to write Nick like a long love letter, like from Civil War times, just describing the jokes I wanted to make on the podcast.
My dearest baby.
My dearest Nicholas.
Love you, baby.
Ooh, started in the Civil War, obviously.
Just ends with ooh. Oh, all right. Yeah. So we're just having a casual episode here. All right. Where the world is ending.
Well, it's either dealing with the outside world, which we've done that 2 weeks in a row already.
Yeah, everyone hates it.
Or we deal with then our new world, which is an existence in self-isolation, having to communicate with your friends via the internet, which apparently now is being rationed, which we can very clearly tell because this is very difficult to record.
Also, I got my $1,200 check from the U.S. government, I don't have any complaints anymore. Government's working.
What?
All Americans are getting $1,200. I actually need to send in my taxes so I actually get it.
Helicopter money. What?
Helicopter money.
Yeah.
Wait, so if I have an American bank account still, do I get it?
You need to have filed 2018 or 2019 taxes.
Oh.
Ah, fuck. I didn't make any money.
Well, you made money still just last year.
Also, if you didn't make any money, you can still file taxes. W-4. You just have to put zeros into all the things.
But I don't have, was it a W-4, W-2, or the whatever. Fuck, I haven't filed any of those since I've lived here.
We can counsel off the air.
Okay. I know that the IRS is listening to this now and they're like, what? Oh, an American hasn't paid their taxes living overseas? Like, I'm going to fucking get you.
Uh-oh.
It's really fun like, fact, I've done it every taxes. Year. You just write like a bunch of zeros and then you sign your name and you send it in.
Oh, I still there's have like to a, do my taxes.
There's no double taxation treaty. Unless you make more than, I looked it up, like $102,000.
I really like that.
I'm never making that much money in my entire life. So.
Yeah. I really like the idea that the way Rob describes it, he just got like the back of a letter that like TK sent to him. And he's just like, 0000, Rob.
Just, it's worse than that. My dad America, just writes please. In all the zeros and then I sign it.
That's sick.
Oh, ooh. Anyway, going away from fucking tax chat. Let's talk about what we've been watching, because now that we're inside all the time, we've been resorted to be like watching some of the wildest stuff or some like really good stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. The tax chat is important to this because I've got my money and now I can just be a neat. I don't need to. I just get my steady stream. My $1,200 will last me, you know, probably forever. You know, if I budget it, and I can just watch movies.
I've done all my spreadsheets.
Rob's gonna do the thing that Charlie does when he's like, I can feed myself for a week with $5 and just like grabs like he's like, I'm gonna get vitamins and just like mush them up into a paste and make energy balls.
All right. Speaking of which, I started watching Doomsday Preppers.
Yeah. King, yeah, like that's my favorite shows.
It's so good. Because they're all going to die.
Yep.
They're all genuinely stupid. But they all look like they're having a lot of fun. Some of them. Some of them are fucking psychos. A lot of them I'm like, if I had a bunch of money just sitting around, I would want to like make a fort with me and my buddies in the middle of like the New Mexican desert. Like that actually sounds like a good time.
Yeah, there was like, I think it's the second episode that I watched where it's just like this very old couple who are spending their retirement in like this plateau in Texas building like a sustainable
house. Yeah, dude, it's sick.
House.
That's like, that's one of the best ones.
Yeah, that just sounds like a nice retirement project.
Yeah, you're friends and, you know, full of assault weapons. Like, that to me sounds like a really good time.
Mm-hmm.
But then my favorite one is the one where he gets like a, he basically gets this wife from Colombia and then has to like introduce her to the fact that he's no longer going to live in Somerset, Massachusetts, that he's actually going to like fuck off to an RV in the middle of the country.
Get
after
God.
She just comes to America and deals with all that shit.
Oh my God.
They're so cool.
I haven't seen that one. I just really like the one where the guy like destroys his thumb because he's too stupid to load a gun or like fire it or something, and then he faints.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's in season two, or at least the second season that's on Netflix.
Yeah.
He shoots his thumb off like an absolute fucking idiot. Yeah. That guy, big respect, Arizona Energy. That dude lives in like Glendale or something like that, or Gilbert. And this guy, you know, like yeah, just like thinks he's a fucking operator, and then the gun misfires in his hand and it shoots his thumb off.
Yep. It's when he wants to take his kids shooting.
Jesus. Yeah. Oh God, it was yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite ones. Another one that there was
this
really
other guy
good
that
was...
faints because
exactly, yes. This other fucking guy who's like a doctor in Texas. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, we're having our security measures where they have their outposts that then they make sure that no one's like they make an IED, the IED goes off, and then they have like a dummy that they start shooting at. Well, the one dude has
he invites like this family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His buddy then is supposed to give suppressing fire when they're inside the outpost. And then he shoots his gun from inside the outpost, and it makes the other dude deaf from the sound. And then he starts crying and starts throwing up and shit like that. It's so good.
Yeah,
Christ.
And then he thinks he will never hear again. And then he said, like, oh, I don't know if I can have you here anymore and shit like that. And it's like, yeah. This was about trust and...
They're all such
babies.
So
much good shit to watch.
They're such babies.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything I think studying the science of Marxism-Leninism is somewhat like doomsday prepping because it's just, you know, it's more suited to my skills, which is sitting and reading and not moving. But I think it is psychologically preparing yourself for a great change that is coming. So I think that I can understand these people. I think we're on the same page. So what like tips have you learned from doomsday prepping that could apply to us or our audience?
Is this just a general question?
This is well from doomsday preppers actually. Or you because
yeah,
you
yeah,
all
yeah,
seem
yeah.
to know the show quite well and I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like the only tidbit of advice, because there is like in between all of it, there is like actual things and like lessons that you can get out of it. The biggest one is that then like that I've gotten from the show is that then everyone's all like, when shit hits the fan, I'm gonna get my ass out of here. Yeah. And the thing about it is, yeah, the thing about it is that then in reality, like let's say that then something were actually bad that then would happen, the last thing you'd want to do is like actually move from where you are. So your initial thing should just be to stay put unless you like absolutely need to leave, like a hurricane or something like that where you're being evacuated. So that is like an actual lesson I learned, is that everything that these people do, don't do that. Stay where you are, make sure that you have enough. I mean, and even like what we've been doing like right now, I'm not gonna lie, I had to think about doomsday preppers half the time being like, all those idiots would be dead by now because they would have like fled to the middle of fucking nowhere or whatever, and then probably have starved themselves out by the time of being like, yep, we're just gonna wait out the, you know, the quarantine here in, you know, the, you know, forest of Brandenburg by ourselves, having no actual outdoor skills whatsoever because they learn everything from like YouTube or something like that. Yeah. And the only skill that they actually have, at least in the US, is that they're just all like shooting guns. And then they all just like collecting canned stuff. Some of them are a little bit smarter, but the most, like the overall majority of them are idiots. Only thing is you just stay put and you make sure that then you have enough stuff. And that's helped so far for me. Not gonna lie. So
the two things that I've kind of like picked up that I find really interesting about the show are the people who are like best prepared. So like the thing is that before they investigate like how each person is preparing and stuff, they ask them like, why are you preparing? Like, what is your doomsday scenario that you think is like right around the corner? The ones who are always like the most prepared, I find, are the ones who have the least plausible here's how the world's going to end thing. Like there's
North Korea is going to attack the United States with.
No, there was this one guy who was like, I want to say he was in Illinois somewhere, and he owned like a secondhand phone shop, and it was like he had the whole thing decked out, like his entire house run on solar power. He'd been like, he had several side businesses. He had enough food to last him and his family for like, I think something like 14 years. Like, it was ridiculous. But then it's like, the world's going to end because there's going to be a big earthquake that tears the United States in half. And I'm like, okay.
Cool. The Bugs Bunny gif is real. He's just going to saw the US in half.
And it's like, okay, that's interesting. The other one is this entire show is just the epitome of the good, like, Homer Simpson. It's a good Homer Simpson quote that I did not get as a child because I did not understand American culture until I watched the show. But the Halloween episode where, like, they tell Homer he has to kill Flanders. And he's just like, do I dare kill my neighbor? Do I dare live out the American dream? Because that's all these people want to do. Like, every... Yeah. Also, they all have their, like, apocalypse scenario. There's going to be economic collapse. Iran's going to attack. There's going to be a terrorist attack that blows up a nuclear power plant or whatever. But all of it is just like, that's just background dressing. The important thing is the unruly swine will start to take my things.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's all about that.
Yeah, I know when the apocalypse coming. It's when my fucking next door neighbor won't clear the brush that is on my side of the property line.
Who wasn't it Rand Paul who got like an actual fucking altercation with his like?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he deserved it.
King shit. Yeah. Rand
what
Paul's,
actually happened there? Yeah.
Yeah, Rand Paul's for neighbor the beat the shit out of him for something really, really, really small. Like he had a
I think it was a tree on his property.
No, Rand Paul was being a dick. I remember Rand Paul kept cutting down trees even when he said not to. Like his neighbors like, don't do that because it's on my side. And then he did it anyway, and he was like piling up the brush like right next to like it seemed intentional just to piss his neighbor
violate
off.
My NAP.
What? Someone like him deserves that, especially with like the politics he stands for.
Sorry, Yulia, you are violating the non-aggression policy.
trees cannot sign the non-aggression policy.
It's non-aggression, non-aggression pact, isn't pact. It?
Yeah, it's non-aggression pact.
It's a policy.
They can't enter into the pact. Yeah.
You guys are mixing it up with the NEP.
Yes. Yeah.
Damn, fuck.
The new aggression pact. God. But yeah,
the thing, the thing too with like Doomsday Preppers that I see that's just like also like internalized or just like it can only be American too is exactly the thing of that Homer Simpson quote of like how many people I see on Instagram back in Phoenix who are like, damn, I wish it was zombies, you know? So that thing like every fucking just douchebag American wants to like pretend that they would be like, yo, like fucking virus, I can't kill it, but I'd fucking go ape shit on some zombies, bro. Like, and there was actually that really bad, what's it called? That like really bad, like troop made zombie movie, you know, that just like really perfectly encapsulates that.
Well, a lot of zombie movies, like there's an era of zombie movies, which is just fantasies about killing your neighbors.
Yeah, it's that. Yeah. And it really is like I've seen so many people talk about Corona this way of like, yo, man, like, well, this is fucked. I can't kill my neighbor. Like, this is bullshit.
Oh, God. So what else? What else? Rob, what have you been watching?
Well, I wanted to say I watched a zombie movie this week. I've been watching a mix of apocalypse movies and Studio Ghibli movies. Got to balance the tonalities.
Those are the two political extremes.
Yeah, the two genders.
Yeah.
So... I'm not sure what I've learned from the apocalypse movies. They were pretty good. Children of Men is a great movie.
It is.
It's a brilliant movie.
Yeah.
Brilliant
movie.
Watched it several times.
A lot has already been said about how it like describes not the future, but like our current time when no future is possible or like it's impossible to imagine because everyone just goes through their daily life.
It's history ended, Rob.
What?
It's because history ended.
History been ended.
Yeah, history done did end a long time ago.
Done did end.
Done did end. It's there's a new past tense has been created in English to describe history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. No, those are good films. I don't think I'm in the mental state to watch any post-apocalyptic stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I've been watching is just like episode after episode of House.
That's worse. Yeah, well, that is so much kind worse. Of
apocalyptic.
Oh my god, I couldn't deal with some fucking just like you know, drugged out doctor show right now. No, sorry, I'm with Rob on this. I would much rather watch an apocalypse movie than watch House.
Kira,
anything medicine related.
I'm gonna pitch why I find this comforting right now.
Please.
Is because I feel like House is what the people in charge are like right now. They're just like low-key racist, low-key sexist, wildly overconfident in their own abilities, absolute disregard for anyone underneath them. But you know what happens in House? They actually solve it. So,
well, it's, that's like the vision, right?
Situation or whatever.
There's like literally every house. Go ahead, Julia.
Except for like the sad moments when people die, like there are some sad people dying.
Yeah, but I've been running the numbers. That's like twice a season. Yeah, that's twice out of every 24 episodes.
I know, but I'm talking about like main characters having cancer and shit like that. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Okay, I'm on season 4 right now.
Oh,
come
shit. On. Come on, it's old.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But I think you nailed it, Kieran, because what's funny about House is like it's exactly what you say. Everyone, like the House guy, is like, yeah, he's racist and sexist and a fucking asshole. But you know, at the end, he just has this breakthrough, and every episode is like, yeah, he's actually playing 10D chess. And then this is literally like a Deus Ex Machina every time that he comes up with, like, yeah, it's lupus or whatever. Which is, vision,
actually,
which is the vision?
Which is the vision
of the elites? They're like, yeah, I might be racist, sexist, and everyone hates me, but I'm gonna come up with the right answer at the end. I'm pretty sure they're not, but that is absolutely the vision. So I do think House captures our moment. And when you texted that you were watching House, I thought, you know, I'm watching Children of Men, 12 Monkeys, like these visions of an apocalyptic future. But I think House captures the future better, because when Joe Biden, he either is going to lose or just get kicked off the ticket, but he's going to be valorized as like, look at the sacrifice he made. And I think they're going to remake House with Joe Biden as House.
No, that would be brilliant, especially if they just had to like, you know, basically improv every episode. Like the writers definitely write something, but then he goes on in his own
he can't do a listen here, Jack.
Does he always like move out of the camera accidentally? So he's like never in the shot.
No, but they're like, they're forced to follow him. Like they have to make it seem like what is happening was intentional. So like every episode is just like someone comes in with a really interesting case. Oh, it's really dramatic. Some like special effects zoom into one of their important blood vessels bursting for no reason, and then the last 20 minutes of the episode is he's gone and got ice cream for himself. That's kind of nice.
It keeps going on about how he used to get ice cream all the time when he was working as a lifeguard, and the kids would come by and stroke his legs or whatever the fuck it is.
And everyone's waiting for the episode where Obama cameos, but it never comes.
But I do think it would capture liberal mindset. Like Cal Penn is working for Obama or whatever now, and is watching the new House reboot and is like, damn, I got to get back on the show. He's going to ask Obama to like kill him off so that he can go back to the fake universe. Maybe Obama can do a triple tap on Cal Penn so he can return to the fake world.
Oh, God. So I have also been enjoying, Rob has been like finally dipping his toe into anime.
Yeah. Mm. Finally.
With the Ghibli
stuff. Graceful toe dip.
About time.
Exactly. But you've been watching some good stuff, but also like the basic stuff, like you've been watching some Ghibli. You've been finding that good.
Well, I've just been... All the Studio Ghiblis are on Netflix, which... I mean, the whole Netflix thing is... I'm kind of like... It's kind of bad how much influence Netflix has over our culture. Like, there's just one thing. Like, I didn't watch that Tiger King shit. Mostly because I'm sure it's good, but I kind of have this contrarian thing where I'm like, this is literally just a thing because Netflix produced it and it's like, here, it's like taking a big spoon and forcing it to everyone's mouth. Like, this is what you're going to talk about. Enjoy it. This is your interpersonal relationships and communication. It's going to be framed around our, you know, whatever we decided to produce.
That existed before Netflix did. Were you not there when Breaking Bad was on TV?
No, it's worse with Netflix, because on TV, like, you have cable, and yeah, everyone tunes in to watch Breaking Bad because people like it, or Game of Thrones or whatever.
Actually,
but Netflix is like, you're on this platform. You all pay for this platform, and Netflix, like, they boost it. So you log on, and they're like, watch fucking Tiger King in big, you know, letters or whatever, as soon as you log on. You're like, all right, I guess this is what I'm paying
for. I will let you know that Yulia and I steal my sister's Netflix account. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Also, I stream illegally, so, like, Breaking Bad and shit like that illegally streamed on Minecraft. all the other shit that I'm watching, like 90 Days Fiancé, fucking illegally streamed. Oh, yeah. So like, I have options, kids. I have options. So yeah. I don't need to watch what Netflix offers me.
So
I
kind of agree with Rob, but there's like a slight difference, because I think what was happening with Breaking Bad is still kind of what's happening with like the Marvel movies and like the new Star Wars and stuff, where the pressure to watch those is like a social pressure. Mm. Like, I have to watch the Marvel movies so I can keep up with other people's conversations. That's basically like why
talk
I'm
to other people. That's what I do.
Yeah, I was gonna say
the
virus
I've never
forced that now.
I've seen maybe two or three Marvel movies, and I'm perfectly equipped for all conversations, because everyone I also know doesn't watch these movies either, except for Kieran, because he broke his brain with them.
Yes, I did. But like, that's why, like, I had a very hard time vocalizing when the fourth Avengers came out, why I was so annoyed, but it was because I feel like I was only watching that film so that there was other people, like when people mentioned it or talked about it or referenced it, I would know what the fuck they were doing, rather than I actually want to watch this. Whereas the Netflix situation is like, because they control the method of delivery, they're forcing like everyone to talk about this one thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Where I think it's the reverse with what Breaking Bad was like, I have to watch Breaking Bad to keep up with the like water cooler talk in the office or whatever.
Yeah, no, that is, I guess
so,
that
so
is
it's kind
different.
Of like, I mean, okay, it kind of like has to do with like this platform thing, you know?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We get our service from this platform, you know, we get our, and since Netflix like provides the content of the platform, and a lot of people don't even use cable anymore, it is, as Rob said, kind of like monopoly in the sense
of definitely
content, what we're watching.
It's but
yeah, we need to be the monopoly content, this podcast.
Obviously you can stream whatever you want and you have all these options, but like, yeah, what are you going to watch? Like, I don't know, you're tired in the evening coming home from work or after working at home or whatever you're doing, and you're like, I'm going to watch something, and it's like, I don't want to go find something, I'll just see what Netflix tells me to watch.
And the first thing is Tiger King right now.
I don't know. It just seems to me like Netflix is a Mort and Joe, and it just like gives you just a little bit of water very grandly, just like cracks it open, and just like a little few episodes of Tiger King sprinkle out, and it just washes over you, and you're like, I guess I feel alive.
Like, what you see on Netflix is very dictated on, like, there's ways of like breaking open their algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first time, when I started watching Terrace House, and it's just like, oh shit, Netflix has decided I need to see all the like Japanese and Korean content they have. And it's just like, and you get all sorts of wild recommendations after that. The same thing goes if you start like watching when they had RuPaul's Drag Race on there.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then you get all the
they have it.
Yeah, you get all the anything and everything that then could
queer
be
shows.
Queer, yeah.
Yeah.
Or LGBT.
Yeah. And the thing with like, I don't know. I'm never really drawn into like the things that Netflix features on their front page. So I do think that there is something just like genuinely like the situation that we're in, and maybe like there is like some big conspiracy that they were like saving this for when we're all in quarantine, because it is such a just like memeable show. But I know that then like half the time whenever Netflix like gives me an ad for something that just looks god awful, I avoid it like the absolute plague. No matter if anyone's talking about it or not, because Netflix, like, made for Netflix shows are horrible. Then made for Netflix documentaries are also fucking atrocious.
I actually watched some of those, especially the teenage movies that are about teenage angst, depression, and shit like that. I'm always like, okay, that looks like something not easy to watch, but kind of easy to watch, but also like kind of sad, kind of like, I don't know. I find them very entertaining. The Netflix mate.
shows.
Yeah, well, the, I mean, movies. there's the Netflix shows that I, there's a lot of different types of the Netflix original shows, but the ones that I don't like are the, a lot of the drama series, which end up just being like 10-hour long movies.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I can't think of one like that.
Mindhunter was like a 10-hour long movie.
Oh, I've heard of the name like once or twice. I don't know what the fuck that is.
I feel like any drama that's like any scripted drama on Netflix is basically that.
I remember I watched the two ones about like Berlin, and those are maybe the worst shows I've ever seen.
Which ones?
There was the, or maybe it was just one, and I just thought it was two. There were two. There's the one where then the guy is a CIA operative, and then it Berlin Station, dog shit show. I only watched it because it said Berlin on the thing, and I'm like, I'm curious of where this is filmed.
I live in Berlin,
and holy shit, it was really bad. I think I got three episodes in and stopped watching it. And then there was the one that was so bad I loved it, which was Dogs of Berlin, which was like, let's take four blocks and make it like, 4 blocks is actually a good series.
Yeah,
it's like if the Germans figured out like American crime shows and actually executed them decently, and then four dogs. Dogs of Berlin was like, well, let's do that, but like just make it for just really fucking like, you know, species German audience. So it's horribly racist. It's just just stereotype on stereotype on stereotype. And I really enjoyed it. I really wish that there's a second season because it was so bad. I liked it. And I have nothing else to say about it other than you should watch it if it exists in your country still. It may have been so bad that they took it off Netflix.
Oh, they bury the shows that don't do well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is every, like, it's literally just like the plot line is like if Mesut Özil was killed by the Turkish mafia because someone gets into like a gambling debt or something.
Fuck, now I remember
that. You remember it now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The star German athlete is actually a Turkish guy, which then ends up in a race war in like the middle of nowhere in Berlin at the end of it.
Like Hellersdorf.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so fucking bad. It's good.
Yeah.
What have you been watching, Yulia?
Like I said, yesterday I watched All the Bright Places, which is a movie about two teenagers and like, I don't know. Yeah, teenager movies I'm watching. And of course, I watched The Circle.
Oh, The Circle's so good.
Yeah, especially in times like these, it just seems like it's a normal conversation they're having.
Yeah, right.
The Circle is just you and your homies podcasting. That's it.
Yeah. So I'm watching stuff like that. I'm watching good movies in between. Like, I actually made a list of stuff that... The problem is you can't just, like, you know, you want to just... You're bored as fuck. You just want to get into a movie. But you really don't want to get into a movie. You know what I mean? So you really don't want to concentrate that much. You just want to relax. So,
yeah.
Like, a lot of those movies I still have on the list, and, like, I watch some of them from time to time, but I also watch a lot of reality TV and,
good.
And teenage angst growing up movies about teenagers.
Being angsty,
yeah, and dying sometimes, and sad stuff.
What have you learned from these shows? Like, do you feel, I would feel like way OP, you know, like these teenagers have all these teenager problems and it's like, yeah, I see that, but like, I can handle that now. I'm in my late 20s.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, her sister dies and she falls in love with this boy, but he is kind of like, he has his own problems. Then he kills himself. Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, shit.
Those are the teenage movies I'm watching. So, I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
If I can, the reason I went on my Netflix soliloquy was to introduce, like, it was just self-flagellating, because I am watching Studio Ghibli just because they're all on Netflix now. So, I'm just, you know, a slave to the algorithm like everybody else.
Yeah, you can do it and participate and acknowledge it. It's fine.
Yeah.
I still have to finish a lot of like anime TV shows that I started, but I haven't finished. You know,
I've been doing that too. If they don't immediately grip you, you just have to drop them. There's not enough time to watch all of them.
Yeah, but there are a lot, like some that really got me. Like, if I really want to just like watch food, I want to watch Food Wars. You know, like,
Food Wars. This is the thing that happened when like Rob was like looking for more anime recommendations. He was like, what's the good stuff, like not the meme-y stuff that you like. And I'm like, there's no distinction between these two things. Those are both the same thing. What are you talking about, Rob?
I like the animes that teach me about eco-socialism and have little 12-year-old protagonists, which seem to be every Studio Ghibli movie.
That is true.
I mean, yeah, that is what Studio Ghibli does.
I have to say, I'd seen Princess Mononoke a long time ago. It's still my favorite Studio Ghibli movie. I like those, I guess you'd call them fantasy ones. The Studio Ghibli that's just like the movie version of Animal Crossing, where they're just like, walk around, doo-doo-doo, I'm cute. And then the movie ends. They're all right, but I get kind of bored.
They're
beautiful.
I've been watching a lot of his stuff, especially some of the stuff that I missed. Like, I watched... Was it Ocean Waves? Which there was There's no English dub of it still. No. So like, if you want to watch it in English, you have to watch it with subtitles.
I watch it.
Nice. There's French and German and Italian.
Of
dubs,
course,
there's
because
no,
like yeah,
yeah, it's Europe. Yeah,
we like
culture.
Yeah, culture, baby. But like, yeah, I like Ocean Waves. I like the kind of weird biographical slice of life stuff that Ghibli does. I also really like Ghibli's comedies. Like, I really love Poco Rosso.
That's a bop. That's just an absolute fucking bop.
That's true.
That may be one of my favorites. Just saying.
But Rob, you need to get into the, like, I don't know, you need to get into the representations of the various genres of anime. Yeah. Like, you need to watch, I don't know, what's a good one? Oh, I think actually, no, Rob, you'll love this because it's set in like a fictional Europe. You need to watch Full Metal Alchemist.
All right. Oh, all right. I've heard of that one.
Yeah, the leader is called King Fuhrer Bradley.
King Fuhrer.
King Fuhrer. Not only a Fuhrer, but also a king.
No, but what you were saying about like movies like Ocean Waves or like Your Name or something like that, you know?
Oh, Your Name is so fucking good.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it, yeah. And I really, like, I like these movies because it's so pretty. It's so amazing. Like, I don't know. It's not maybe not as much action as in like the full fantasy ones, you know.
Yeah.
But it's so pretty and like, I don't know, the way
it's so beautiful.
It's beautiful, yeah. It makes me calm. I don't know. I can't explain it.
It's good and emotional. Actually, yeah, I recommend that one to Rob. So Rob, if you want to like, if you want Ghibli quality but you want to move out of like Ghibli as a studio, then Your Name, which is on Netflix.
Yeah,
all right,
but if you
want
to watch
it
in English,
yeah,
you
Your Name,
you have to use a VPN.
I thought you said Full Metal Alchemist.
Full Metal Alchemist is what we would call a shonen anime for boys.
For
boys. Doesn't have that girl stuff in it.
Rob,
your brother has been turned into a suit of armor by like a weird fucking science curse. Yeah, stuff for boys.
An anime that smells like those spray, you know, like Old Spice sprays that you wear in seventh grade.
Like an Axe. It's the anime equivalent of a can of Axe.
No, I like the ones where they teach me about socialism, like Castle in the Sky. That's about socialism.
Yeah, okay. If you want stuff like that, then go for like Kill a Kill is
Kill a Kill's fantastic.
Kill a Kill, oh my god, best. Yeah.
Sounds like, it's like sounds like communism already, am I right? Let's add to that 100 million.
It's anti-fascism, but in the ultimate anime way, it's set in a high school.
Exactly.
That's where the resistance starts, the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
I should clarify for people listening who haven't seen it, The Castle in the Sky is about socialism, not because there's a like a utopia in the sky that is built off of like a long history of industry and knowledge and then turns into this eco, like it sheds that and reaches like the eco utopia communist paradise. No, it's about socialism because the main character has a girlfriend drop out of the sky for him, which is what socialism is about. It delivers you a girlfriend from the sky.
But like, yeah, no, Hayao Miyazaki is like, he's anti-capitalist from an environmentalist perspective. Because he's like, he's a real fucking, if you've watched any Ghibli films, you know he's like enamored with nature.
Yeah, he loves nature.
Yeah.
Posting like, a little bit of eco-fascism sometimes. Eco-fascism. Eco-fascism.
Eco-fascism, yes.
But like, yeah, you know, I came across that in the zombie movies too. Like, even a movie like 28 Days Later, which is pretty good, like it's a critique of military and stuff, they still have to be like, damn, what if we're the virus? Those horses look so beautiful running around. Like, is there any apocalypse movie that doesn't have at least like a little bit of that? Children of Men is pretty disciplined. They just have that scene with the deer, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you could do like a compare and contrast of like the original Dawn of the Dead versus Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, which is just fascism. Everything he changes about it. It literally opens with like a woman in a burqa like eating someone. Because it was made in the Iraq war times. I think I've also told you this as well. It opens with like a truck very slowly crashing into a petrol station. And everyone was like, why is this truck moving so slowly?
9/11.
And then, someone realized it was like traced over the footage of the plane crashing into the tower.
That's beautiful.
Zack Snyder, absolute insane person. But also watch Food Wars. That's another anime you should watch.
I'm going to be honest with you. Food Wars is not on my list.
It should be.
It's really good.
Yeah, it should be.
I have to watch informative things that teach me about history and politics.
No. Stop it, you nerd.
Food Wars deals with class.
Speaking of...
Actually, yes. There is a reading of that Food Wars does deal with class. Yeah,
very much. It's very obvious, actually.
But, he's the son of someone who owns a diner. He can't possibly be a good cook.
Yep,
I see.
Yeah.
Speaking of class, I hear Nick, you've been watching The Sopranos.
I have been actually. I'm on season 4 already.
Now that's a show I want to watch.
I've seen like bits and pieces of it because it was always a show that then like my parents were watching. But I never I think I've seen like the last two seasons, but I had not seen everything up until that. So it's been like a nice refresher. Not into the sense like I don't give a shit about the mafia stuff. It just is a perfect insight into the state of New Jersey, which is where my mom's from. And it's too real. Like it's a little bit too much for me to come to terms with at times.
Wait, back up for a second. What do your parents think about it?
My mom fucking loves like it's her favorite show of all time.
Got good taste.
Yeah. To be very fair, I mean, it is a really good show. There's a reason why, like, so many, people like Milo just meme it all the fucking time. Like, it definitely has that quality. But it's, like, there's a ridiculousness of it that just kind of, like, hits a little bit too close to home for me. And I really appreciate it for that. That's like, the thing I'm having the most fun of is just how... like New Jersey the show is like the mom is like the most stereotypical old person from New Jersey who's just all like, oh, just let me die and this and like just dumb shit like that. I can't describe it. It's just as my mom says, it's the New Jersey state of mind, and I can't sum it up as anything more than that. But The Sopranos encapsulates the New Jersey state of mind probably better than any other media. That maybe like Jersey Shore, probably, just if you want to be stupid and funny about it.
Yay, but, Jersey Shore. Sure.
Yeah, no, I've been watching that. I've been watching Tiger King, obviously, because I'm a little piggy who follows the Netflix algorithm, according to Rob.
All right, I haven't seen Tiger King, so based on the memes, there's a guy who owns a tiger. He's the only good one. Everyone else sucks. I didn't know he ran for governor. That's some new information.
He ran for president too.
So did he own a private, like a for-profit zoo, or did he save the tiger from the for-profit zoo?
Well, just look at that part.
This is my reconstruction of the plot of the show.
You're gonna stop doing this. This happened on the Gearovision live stream where you just mentioned Tom Nook, and I was like so excited that you were playing Animal Crossing, and you're just like, I just picked it up from the internet milieu, the rich Iker that I siphoned off of Twitter, and I'm like, God damn it, Rob.
I mean,
if I'm forced to read it, I'm gonna regurgitate the content.
You know what, Rob? I actually would like we can do a thing. You know, like that thing of people were told to like create the Harry Potter plot, even though they've never read the books, and they come with just like these like ridiculous like things that are not remotely close to the story. I want you to do that with what you know of Tiger King already. So go, like I like where your mind's going already. So there's the one good guy.
There's not much more. I imagine he like takes his tiger out for a walk to show off, like just he and his tiger against the world.
Okay, keep going.
I think he's like. Like the pitch is, I guess, somewhat similar to like Making a Murderer. Like, I guess he's supposed to be some kind of bad guy, but you sympathize with him. I don't think he's murdered anybody, but that's the pitch in the Netflix show. That's all I got.
I mean, I think your description was way too vague that you're kind of not.
Is
really
the show
off.
About neoliberalism? That's my question. The Sopranos, I believe, is about neoliberalism.
The Sopranos is about just like. Yeah, like the I don't know. It's a
New Jersey.
The
ultimate product of neoliberalism. Yeah,
I'm about to say when it's a product of neoliberalism. It's also kind of like in that weird like late 90s, early 2000s thing of like where culture is just like kind of just like in this like slosh of just unsure of what then. Yeah, I mean, end of history sort of bullshit and whatnot. And it does deal with, like, the post-industrial sort of side of neoliberalism. I mean, obviously, and, like, this kind of, like, search for... But Tiger King is not about... I mean, probably about neoliberalism. It's just about a cool dude who, you know, wants to do cool dude stuff, and some people won't let him. And that's the ultimate crime here. Now, the thing that's really wild to me with it too is that then it isn't just him. There's other people in the show too who've not gotten nearly as much attention as Joe Exotic, who are far more interesting than Joe Exotic.
Right, that's his name, Joe Exotic. I thought that was two separate things people were referencing until yesterday.
No. Joe Exotic is one beautiful, beautiful man.
He is the Tiger King. I like when it wraps up like that. Like then I'm like, okay, there's only one thing I have missed, not two.
Yeah. No, the other people in the show are just as, if not more interesting than Joe Exotic. I mean, Joe Exotic is a character, but there's like the other dude who then kind of started this whole trend of like making these, tiger farm, you know, not tiger farms,
weird zoos,
private zoos. Yeah. And he has like a harem where he has like eight wives. And all of his wives he underpays, who they have to work there, and they like he apparently like murders all the baby tigers. There's like very little attention paid to like him, but he's far more. He was like a magician at one point too. Like, you know, why don't we have memes? Actually, to be very honest, I forgot his name because Joe Exotic is just so like in your face.
Steals the show.
Yeah. He is, yeah. I mean, it isn't just that then there's this one dude going around being an absolute piece of shit.
It's like an industry almost.
Yeah, it's an industry where they all know each other. They all do business with each other. And they're all equally as stupid as each other, which is just what makes it so perfect.
That is also neoliberalism.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. But
well, so I've never seen The Sopranos, but my understanding of it is... I guess you could call it postmodern instead, because there's an image of how, like, whatever. Let's take Tiger King, for example. So I imagine there's an image of, like, you know, this is what fucking P.T. Barnum or whoever it is, Bailey or Barnum. P.T. Barnum was like. Like, he was a business king and doing all this stuff and running the circus. And you have that same idea a little bit later in time, but with the, like, classic, like, mafia gangsters. Like, they had a code. They had ethics and stuff. And that is tied to a bygone economic era in the United States. And what you have now is just those myths that you think you can like grab onto, like, yeah, I'm like this person. But then what you're actually exposed to is just the reality of the current situation. Like, you can keep living off that myth. That's all we got. But like, it's kind of, I don't know whether to call it ironic or like just humorous to see like how it actually plays out in reality.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, the thing about it that I think that a show like The Sopranos does better than like other crimes, because the way that I've kind of had this going in my head is that like there have obviously been shows after it, like I would say that like Sons of Anarchy is like The Sopranos for rednecks, which is like, it's just it tries to do then the whole thing of like, see, there's this guy who's conflicted, this and that, but he's just doing what he has to do because, you know, he was born in this life. Where I think that The Sopranos being, like you said, like postmodern is just kind of like, yeah, taking this thing of like, I'm glad that it isn't like an Italian dude who made the show, because it would have just been really fucking lame, obviously. Like, see, they're just cool dudes who have friends and whatnot. They're just doing cool friend guy stuff. But in reality, it's, yeah, I mean, it is all of that, yeah, the postmodern condition of it, like, is it not, like, of just all of it being just kind of, like, falling apart around then the character and this family and stuff like that, because it just doesn't function in, like, a modern world and whatnot. And yet he's still an absolute piece of shit, you know? Like, it's still, like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I got nothing else really.
Well, something you said before, I think Yulia said it too, is that Uncut Gems is about neoliberalism. And I think that's the same reason. Like, you have someone who he doesn't have like
exactly.
He doesn't have a clear like person he's copying, but he's like about that hustle. Clearly the hustle's fucking anxiety inducing. Like, but you just act like, yeah, I got swag, everything's fine. It's the same idea, right? You see I think that movie does a good job because it like just has just enough connections to like the, like where they got the crystal or whatever it's called, the opal from in, I forget where the mine was, somewhere in sub-Saharan Africa. And then you have the connections with like, he, like Adam Sandler's character is at one level in relation to like to Kevin Garnett as a basketball player and The Weeknd as like a singer, and about how they're all like, it's just like this strive for fame, clout, whatever you want to call it, is built upon like just the fumes of this economic system. It's not a productive process. It's just trying to like, you know, carve out a little bit of clout for yourself while the giant pool of available clout shrinks and shrinks like the Aral Sea or something.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Oh.
But he's cool, so that's why it's all right.
That's the thing I always wonder, is that like, who are like, I know the type of people who like finds these characters cool, but yeah, they're but, not
like, it's wrong to say that they're not cool, because they obviously are cool under these like you can see the like facade.
No, like, no, of course
no one's inherently cool. You can see the facade about how it's created, without like dismissing it outright. Like, you can't think, like, you just have to accept that, like, the constructed nature of it.
Whoa, they're trying to build a prison. Hey guys, Sonic here. When I'm not speeding through Green Hill Zone and trying to top Dr. Robotnik, or listening to Serge Tankian blast his beautiful Armenian pipes, I listen to Corner Spady, my favorite European political podcast. You can support them at patreon.com/CornerSpady. Whoa, I love chili dogs, but for the price of one chili dog a month at a really expensive ball game, you can support this great podcast. Oh, I gotta go fast. Why do they always send the poor?
I want Kieran to explain his dissertation, because we didn't get to it.
I'll mention briefly with fucking Full Metal Alchemist. Yeah, I got to do a really weird dissertation in school because I did graphic design in college, and they just let you do whatever the fuck as your dissertation.
So are you a doctor? Do you have a PhD? Is that why you wrote a dissertation? Or is it a master's thesis?
No, no. Dissertation's the other one. Yeah, no, I'm a bachelor's or whatever.
It's okay. We can keep saying it if you want. I'll call you Dr. Kieran.
Okay, Dr. Kieran, I can quickly explain. No, I did my dissertation on Japanese media's depiction of Europe, which is wild. Especially, I think you'll like it a lot, Rob, if you watch Full Metal Alchemist, because it is Europe through the eyes of like someone who's kind of vaguely read some Wikipedia articles and seen some photographs and maybe went on one holiday once.
That's all you need.
That's all you need. Like, you were talking about Hayao Miyazaki. Like, he's kind of enamored with the three countries in Europe. He's enamored with are like Ireland, Wales, and Italy.
Yes.
And that's basically everywhere in his movies. Especially
where's Ireland in the movies? I don't know if I've seen that.
Watch Tales of Earthsea. That's like where you can very clearly see like the Welsh and Irish influence.
Everyone says it's really bad, but I like Ursula Le Guin and I like Studio Ghibli. So where does it go wrong?
No,
all the lists say it's like the worst one.
No, I wouldn't say that. God, no,
I can imagine the lists are wrong. But I'm just waiting for a pitch.
Yeah, I have a special place in my heart for Arietti, but I don't think Arietti's very good. Arietti was like when his son tried to take over the studio. But, okay.
I remember that episode of The Sopranos, too.
when the son tried to take over Tony's anime studio. it's like that stuff's kind of legitimate because Hayao Miyazaki like spent I think like more than a year like just running around Italy, so like most of his fantasy settings are just like various parts of Italy just merged together, like the north and the south and Tuscany with Venice and all sorts of stuff. You'll see that a lot in like Kiki's Delivery Service. Yeah,
I was confused in Nausicaa where the hell that's supposed to be. Like, I guess they're medieval Europe, but it's very vague.
Yeah,
where exactly.
It's of course, yeah. But like, that's just his kind of interpretation of fantasy, which up until very, like within Japan, up until very recently, most fantasy has been like expressly Eurocentric. I think like that's the importance of like Naruto. Like, Naruto was specifically a project by the author to make like a purely Japanese fantasy setting. Which is pretty cool for that purpose, but also it's Naruto, so whatever. There's just all sorts of weird shit about how they kind of view Europe and how they like view themselves. The really interesting thing is when they draw Japanese people within a TV, within an anime that is set in Europe, they like really exaggerate Japanese stereotypes in a way that's kind of weirdly racist towards themselves. But then you get to also learn about like what kind of visual stereotypes they have towards European people. Like, apparently, we have big noses and chins. That's our thing. And also we have the other thing that like I think a lot of European people kind of get their mind blown with. But apparently, our eyes, according to them, are really narrow.
See,
Europeans have oval shaped eyes, whereas Japanese people have circular eyes. That's kind of the weird distinction they see, and that's how it manifests in drawings of themselves.
Kieran, have I ever showed you, I was at the British Museum in London,
yes,
and they had this whole section about, like, I don't know, Japanese history, and they had this one, I think it was from like 1500 or something, and it was just drawings of what other people in the world look like. No, it must have been way later than that. So it must have been somewhere between, must have been after 18, like the... whatever the time is, the Meiji Restoration.
Yeah.
No, it was a time, no, there were traders, but people couldn't leave the country. So before that. And they just had like, this is what other people in the world look like. And they just had like a Dutch family, a family from the Mughal Empire, and someone else. But the Dutch family, like, they fucking roasted them. Like, they look like little pink piggies. Like, it was hilarious. I'm going to find it now. I think I took a photo. It was like in a textbook or whatever. Like, this is what the rest of the world looks like. Look at these fucking Dutch idiots.
I mean, that's kind of what they do as well. They also do this weird thing where if a European or like an American appears in an anime set in Japan, they'll like really exaggerate their Europeanness. They'll have really big nose, really big chin, that kind of shit. But when the show is set in Europe or like a fictional Europe, they'll make everyone look more Japanese. Or like what they envision. It'll just be like how they draw a Japanese person, except they'll have blonde hair. It's like weird shit like that. It's very complicated and weirdly confusing. The only thing I really regret about my dissertation is, well, not really regret, but like when I did it like 1 year before Attack on Titan anime came out, which that's another one if you want to see like weird Japanese interpretations of Europe, because everyone in that show is called like Henrik or Amelia and like have these, from a Japanese perspective, very European names.
They also have like pretty German names, like Hans and I don't know, like weird shit like that. They're called, don't know if it's only in the German translation.
Aren't they called Jägers?
But Yeah, literally the opening line of the anime theme, the first season theme is absolutely great bop for the gym. But the line is "Sie sind das Essen, wir sind die der Jäger."
Oh yeah,
they are the prey, we are the hunters.
Yeah.
It's very fash. The show's not good, especially when they reveal in later seasons that the Titans come from like Jews. That's a whole other episode, I think, of explaining that one. But the other things they do is like, yeah, very, they speak kind of German in the theme song. Everyone has very German names, but at the same time, the architecture is like incredibly Tuscan. The leading theory before later scenes came around was that it was actually set somewhere in like the Carpathian Mountains. So it's like somewhere in Romania or Hungary.
Austro-Hungarian
yeah, pretty much
fucking, and also the Titans program that they had.
The other thing is that when they shout the line in the anime "Sie sind das Essen, wir sind die Jäger," they're literally showing like a picture of the queen. It's all very like, again, what Japanese people in a weird kind of cartoonish way think of Europe, and it's really interesting to look at, especially when you start to think that, oh yeah, European countries, they're so like crazy different from each other. And then Japan is just like, haha, no, you're not. And then they just merge them all together in their shows.
I definitely appreciate that. You know, they're more unified than like we are in our idea of Europe.
Yeah. So I think to end off this episode, what would people recommend to watch? Like, what are you planning to watch next, if anyone has anything on their list?
Who wants to go first?
I can start if people want, because there is actually something that I thought would be very comforting right now, and if anyone hasn't
seen
it,
should not be House. I will not watch House.
I'll continue watching House, but that's not what I'm going to recommend. Is, if anyone hasn't watched it, strongly recommend Nathan for You. I'm going to be watching that.
I have that written down. I actually do.
You
really
not
watch
Nathan
it.
For You. You would absolutely fucking love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I've thought for a while, but I just have never seen it. You know, I have very high standards with TV shows. I only start them if I know I'm going to like them.
So. No, you need to lower your standards, man. Get into the void. Stop.
Send me a link. I'll watch it.
Nice. Nick, you've seen Nathan for You, right?
Me? No.
Yeah. Okay. Shit. I'm going to give the pitch of Nathan for You. Nathan for You is like a mock...
I've seen it.
Yulia? Okay, good.
Yeah.
It's like a fake reality TV show of this guy called Nathan who goes around fixing businesses. And all the businesses he's interacting with think he's real, think he's like a part of an actual reality TV show that is meant to help businesses. But he just suggests all these ridiculous ideas that are technically all legal. I'm trying to think of a good example. Oh yeah, he got like a gas station to advertise like really low gas prices with the condition that you could only get those gas prices with a rebate. And then he put the mechanism to get the rebate was like in a post box hidden in the middle of like the Sierra Nevada mountains.
What's the one where he makes a band?
I think he probably did make a band at some point.
Yeah, there's something about making a
band. There's one where he like...
Rob, you're getting that confused with P. Diddy. He had a whole show that was about that.
Nathan for you should remake making the band with just like, I don't know, random people online, like kind of producers on Instagram who are trying to get famous.
There's an episode where he unionizes all the taxi drivers in LA and starts sending death threats to Uber as a company.
Well, he got famous with the dumb Starbucks, right? I think that was the first time I heard about
him. Yeah, dumb Starbucks got a lot of attention, but it was already a show before that.
Yeah.
But like the dumb Starbucks thing was important because that's when everyone realized everything he was doing was real. Because people thought like for the longest time that it was a completely staged reality TV show, that everyone on it was actors.
I've mentioned Children of Men and Uncut Gems. You can watch both of those. Great movies. Studio Ghibli. Everything I've talked about, I like. For a recommendation, I just found this last night. I don't think I looked well enough. If you've ever seen the documentary series The Battle of Chile, I'd highly recommend that. Three different sections of footage on the ground of the basically the Allende government into the coup. They're really fantastic. I think I didn't look hard enough, or it must be new. I never found an English language subtitled section of part 3, which is called Popular Power. And I was just Googling last night and I found it. So I'm going to watch that tonight. Parts 1 and 2. Part 1 is like the lead up to the coup. Part 2 is the coup. And then part 3 is like a longer term view of like the workers and like these new worker co-ops and everything that they're building in Chile at the end of the 60s and early 70s. I highly recommend it. A country in a time of change. Not a happy ending.
Nice. I guess my turn?
Yeah.
I don't have any recommendations, but I'll just, I guess, talk about what I guess I'm probably going to end up curiously watching, because I haven't seen anyone actually talk about this show, but I saw an ad on HBO Go that I've been stealing from my sister. There's a show that's like kind of like Man in the High Castle, but it's an HBO show, so it probably is actually better. That then is like, what if Charles Lindbergh became president of the United States?
And, okay.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm like, Charles Lindbergh was a Nazi. Like, what happens? And then it's like, the plot is that Charles Lindbergh becomes president as being a, like, the you know, candidate for the American Nazi Party. And I'm like, this could go one of two ways. It could be horrible, like most alternate history things like this are, or because it's an HBO show, it may actually be kind of decent. I don't remember the name of it, but I just saw the ad for it.
Yeah, it's my friend recommended it to me too. It's The Plot Against America.
That's the name of it. Yeah, I saw it. The only thing that I was just curious of, because it's a thing that we may have talked about, I think, previously in the show, of like the thing I found kind of confusing with Man in the High Castle, the TV show, not the book really, because the book is completely different, is that their perception of like if the Nazis ran the United States, like, was just kind of like daily American life. And I don't think that they like brought that over as well in the show, that like that the US is quite fascism at its core, or quite fascist at its core. And they like, I feel that they could have like handled that better in a way, you know, cause it just kind of like goes and like, okay, yeah, suburban America, everyone lives nicely, this and that and that. But then like deep in its underbelly is like, then this like weird, like, you know, like, you know, race science-y sort of stuff and this and that and that. And they try to, like, adopt too much of, like, the Nazi principles within to, like, the ideology of the U.S., which doesn't really... It just kind of comes off as clunky and awkward. So I'm curious of how they then do it in this show, of then kind of, like, showing how, like, enamored Americans are actually quite with the idea of fascism. They just don't know how to, like, put it in their heads. Like, just looking at them, the sense of, look at any Trump supporter right now with how Trump is handling, you know, the situation with, like,
the thing that we weren't going to talk about.
What? No, we're not going to.
The thing we weren't going to talk about.
I'm not going to, like, go into any details.
Yeah. But
they, like, if it's the guy that they like who's doing it, they, like, they fucking love the militarized state. And we, I mean, this is just with, like, with everything else that we've seen in the past, too. They're not, like, these are the same people who are telling you, oh, yeah, small government, small government, small government. And I think that then it's really interesting that then if you have things that then are draped in a white nationalist background of, like, assisting people and this and that and that, like, America's quite NASBOL, just straight up. You know, the politics in Turingen could work very well, probably, in certain parts of the United States. I'm just saying. NASBOL gang, where you at?
Don't insult Boro Ramalho. It's an open question whether, like, the U.S. could even be fascist in the sense that, like...
Oh, it wouldn't be like Nazism or whatever. I mean,
because, like, it would just be a military dictatorship. Like, you see that now with the, like, the military's preparing to, like, control crowds and whatever in the coming coronavirus riots. And Donald Trump loves the big beautiful generals, so they're just going to roll right in. You know, whatever they're like. What institution, like Congress, is what, a 15% approval rating, and what does the military have? Probably like 80% or something. There's open questions whether that would hold if they were actually, like, took over, but, like, all the signs are there that just, like, there's not even a robust enough left that, movement, like, to crush. They would just roll in and be like, now we're more, like, I've had people tell me, like liberals tell me, like, well, if the military could get things done better than Trump, then I'd vote for the military. Like, explicitly. And not 50-year-old.
Damn. Next election is the next election is Donald Trump versus the Egyptian military.
I was thinking about this the other day. If Steve Jobs didn't die, he would be like the Napoleon figure for all liberals in America to crush Trump and inaugurate like a tech dictatorship. So I guess we can be happy that didn't happen.
Steve Jobs would be their, like, 18th premier sort of...
People, you know, fucking Napoleon. Love Steve Jobs. I forgot people, like, cried when he died and left flowers at Apple stores and stuff. Imagine if he were alive. I think liberals would be en masse trying to draft him to, like, lead an American
empire.
I was so happy
doing this episode because we were talking about something just so, like, you know, normal. And then now we mentioned that then, like, this weird liberal cult around fucking just evil-ass
Hey, he's dead.
Steve Jobs.
He can't hurt you anymore.
Yes, he can.
Tim Cook is not going to be the American emperor. Don't worry.
Like, don't worry.
No, he doesn't. Like, he doesn't have it in him.
I've heard
Tim Cook
next,
is Louis Napoleon.
Look, guys, it's all going to be grand because I heard the next presidential debate that the military has requested to sit down. So that's just going to be like deeply embarrassing for the military. Anyway, with all that said, with our recommendations, with us talking media shit, I think it's time to end this very, very casual episode of Corner Spatey.
Yeah, we literally just got you guys to listen to like an hour and a half talking about like what we've been watching. You're welcome.
I mean, we could do worse. I feel like I could do an hour and a half of like me doing my best Sonic impression.
Oh yeah,
gonna be the next episode.
Kieran, can we watch the Sonic movie together? We can do even like a live commentary track, or just do an episode on it.
I want to do that. This is, like, all right, to be very fair, I legitimately once listened to the full E1 episode of them just talking about chips. That was, like, an hour and 15 minutes of my time that I will never get back.
You're saying you want to do that?
Yeah, so I think that's to cope with quarantine, this is now just, like, a media podcast, so that's cool.
But, like, we don't even, like, analyze it properly, we're just like, yeah, watching that, it's cool, whatever. What are you watching?
Hey, it's about neoliberalism. Martin Scorsese movies, that's neoliberalism.
That was sick.
Damn. There's just gonna be a big...
I wish I could run that fast.
Also, to defend my media credits, I was confusing The Plot Against America with another Philip Roth book, American Pastoral, excuse me. American Pastoral has the 60s weather underground
Shut
characters.
Shut up, you nerd.
Oh, sorry. God damn.
Watch Food Wars.
Yeah, Rob, you should definitely watch Food Wars. The food looks really good in it too. That alone is enough to watch the show. It's just like how somehow animated food looks better than real food. But
it's important. It'll also break your
brain. I realized a long time ago,
it's very enjoyable.
Like, if you're going to be any kind of vegetarian or try to be vegan, you either have to like really love to cook or just not give a fuck. And I'm in the second category. I will eat like a jar of peanut butter every day if I have to.
That's why you have
I can't get too worked up about food.
You messaged me for a recipe the other day. That is not true.
Yeah, I'm cooking because my partner is working and studying and I'm trying to cook for her.
Yeah. No, that's how it starts, Rob. It's like trying to impress other people and then suddenly you actually give a fuck about cooking. That's how it works.
Yeah, if me, I would just eat my protein shake for dinner.
All right.
Well, with that revelation, it's chow from me.
4 scoops of the mix, 60% rice protein, 40% pea protein, some apple mock. You can make your own oat milk or just use water, but the oat milk makes it tastier. A little bit of all natural peanut butter, 100% peanuts. Mix that up.
What is this? This is nonsense.
That's proprietary blend. The Cornish Beatty protein shake. 100% vegan.
God damn it.
Oh, God.
Watch Food Wars.
Yeah. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Oh, hey.
Yulia is about to defend my protein shake.
No, I want to say bye. I'm sorry. Like, I can't. I'm too exhausted for talking.
That's all right.
Yulia got shot in the leg during the Food Wars. She's recovering.
No, I wasn't feeling good on the weekend. So
Yulia has coronavirus.
I thought I would be better and able to talk now, but at some point I was just not listening anymore. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Sorry. Can I have one final question for everybody? I'm sure we've all thought we have coronavirus at some point. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is it that you personally have coronavirus? I'm putting myself at a 3.
Okay, right now I have like a running nose, my eyes hurt, my ears hurt, I feel cold.
Honestly, sounds like you have the flu.
The temperature says I have less than 36 degrees, so I'm probably dying.
Julius is already a corpse.
Yeah, maybe it's reverse corona I'm doing. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, Yulia has already died. The last hour and a half of recording was actually just very complex gas escaping from her body. It just sounded like audio content. It was very...
Yeah, it's, probably.
It's amazing how that happened.
I
feel great. So I'm like a 0.
Yeah, Yulia's a 0, but she clearly has the flu, so she's actually a 10 for the flu.
Ooh, I'm a 10.
No.
But only for the flu.
I think I'm at like a 1, a 2, maybe. I don't know. I felt pretty shitty this week, but since the weather got bad again, I feel good.
Wait, you feel better when the weather's bad?
Well, yeah, because my allergies then went away when the weather, like when it snowed today.
Me, it can't be allergies then.
Yeah.
Like it was allergies before, but now it's like...
Yeah.
I also have like a bit itch on the throat, but not like a sore throat or something.
Yeah, mine was definitely allergies because today I feel like 110%. I feel real good. So
I had really bad hay fever for most of my life, but whatever type of pollen I am allergic to does not exist in Germany, so I'm a fucking king in this land.
Cool.
Awesome.
Welcome.
Woo!
And on
yay,
on
congrats, Kieran.
Yeah, on that note of Kieran just being so fucking healthy, having a 0% chance of coronavirus and no allergies in Germany, we will see you all next week.
Yeah, sorry guys for not being on the whole time.
We will see you next week with our live commentary, like a commentary track of the Sonic movie.
Of the Sonic movie? Mm-hmm. Oh no.